This is 5-on-3. Center ice for all things Islanders, Rangers, and all news across the NHL on WFUV Sports.
And welcome back to another edition of 5-on-3, WFUV's best, if only, hockey podcast. Lou Orlando joined, it feels like, as always, by Nick Palmer. He's just here every week. More importantly, we're joined by Trey Rodriguez, who is not only – Nick, you're going to love this. Not only is he making his 5-on-3 debut, he's making his WFUV podcast debut. So I have to start with Trey. Trey, how are you feeling, buddy?
Feeling excited, you know, like I've been waiting for a while to get this opportunity and really excited to talk about hockey on top of that. Such a last week in hockey and this week has been something really special. So I'm excited to start talking about some puck.
Congrats to you, Trey. This is going to be fun. New meet in the 5-on-3 scene is always fun. I'm excited to see what kind of takes you throw off. I like yelling at people on this podcast. So I'm hoping for a bit of that. And this is going to be fun. Oh my gosh. I like having a new member around.
Well, emphasis on new meat, because I think you guys can be at odds, because I was talking to Trey off air. He is a Sharks fan that likes the Rangers. So this is perfect for your little Kings and Islanders fan and Nick Palmer over here. You can just get right to bumping heads.
Are you from San Jose?
No, I'm from Long Island.
Okay.
Oh, it's so good. I love it. All right. I guess we have to talk about NHL free agency. I think a lot of stuff happened. So probably going to have to dive right
Definitely.
In. Well, listen, the Rangers didn't do anything, so we can skip past then for now. Let's start with the local teams that actually did stuff. Nick, if you don't have any problem with this, I think let's start with the Devils, because they feel like the biggest metro local team in free agency when they go out and they sign Brett Pesce, Carolina Hurricanes defenseman. They also get Brendan Dillon, so they're shoring up that blue line a bit. And then this is really bad Aho's thing. I feel like I'm missing something. I mean, obviously they traded for Jacob Markstrom. Oh, and they brought in another former Carolina Hurricane, Stefan Nason. So I think when I look at this Devils team and where we were at with them and what we've been saying on past podcasts was, all right, you have your starting goaltender, and we can debate back and forth about whether or not Markstrom is elite. He's an upgrade over what they've had in net the past few years. But it doesn't matter if you don't have a strong blue line in front of them. Now you have a really strong defenseman in Brett Pesce. Brendan Dillon historically has been a pretty solid defenseman as well. Metrically grades out, and you get a really nice fourth liner or bottom sixer checking forward that fit well in Carolina's system. Maybe he brings some of that to New Jersey. This is a Devils team that doesn't need a ton offensively in my mind, so they attacked areas of need, and I think you have to be pretty happy if you're a Devils fan.
I think you would be very happy as a Devils fan. I mean, he's big. He's 6'3". I see him likely on a top pair. The other Devils signing was Tomas Tatar is making his way back.
Oh, that's right. That happened the other day too.
That also happened. I think this was really big. He's going to certainly be on PK duties for throughout the year. He is one of the most solid defensive defensemen in the league. And I just think the whole, you know, progression of you go after Markstrom first, you build from the back up, right? You go for Markstrom, you add Pesce, and now it's going to be Pesce with like Luke Hughes and Dougie Hamilton. And didn't he play with Dougie Hamilton too? At some point, I think he did. Regardless, Dougie Hamilton still won't be back for a little bit, I think. But regardless, I think it's a great pull. I think now the Devils can get some sleep at night knowing that their blue line is not in complete shambles, and that's a good way to go.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the Devils had a pretty, you know, underwhelming season last season for what they've been trying to do. But especially they were not getting bailed out by their goalie. So getting Markstrom is, you know, it's pretty important. But also getting those pieces like Brett Pesce and Brendan Dillon on defense, they're big physical shutdown guys, you know, like it's very important for a team that's like that. Like you already said, they have the great offensive firepower that they already got, but shoring up that blue line a little bit is really going to help them.
You look at some of the defensemen and the contracts that are getting handed out. Trey and I were joking a little bit about Brady Shea off year and the 7x7. When you see a 29-year-old Brett Pesce get a 6x5.5, and you know, solid size there, but when you listen to what Tucker said on last week's show, this is a guy that his biggest skill is his stick and just his defensive skills more than his physical presence. To me, that's something that probably should age well through a 6-year deal. At 5.5, again, when you look at what other defensemen are getting in this market, I'm not complaining about that at all. I think you compare last year's offseason to this year's offseason, the stark difference is that the Devils analyzed what they needed and they got it. Like, it was fun to think about the Devils last year, especially after they signed Toffoli, traded for Toffoli, and it's like, well, now they're stacked. Like, this is one of the best forward groups that we've seen in a minute. But they never really did anything to address the areas of need, right? They ran at the same goalie tandem. And then when Dougie Hamilton gets hurt, a blue line that was maybe already suspect because you had lost Graves and you had lost Severson, now it's completely exposed, and it was one of the worst blue lines that we saw all season. So what did the Devils do this year? We kind of said it right. Like, they targeted the areas of need. That's, I think, a really smart attack, a really smart approach by GM Tom Fitzgerald, and one that maybe shows that they learned from what went wrong last year and how much of a failure last year was, that this team doesn't need that much more offensively. They need to get tougher and they need to get stingy.
I think that's a great shout. And especially just to highlight again, the penalty kill was every time you watched a Devils game and the Devils went on the kill, you almost assumed the other team was going to score, that one of the defensemen was going to get beat. And now with Pesce, I mean, he led, I think he was always on the ice for a penalty kill along with Slavin when he was on the Carolina Hurricanes. So just to have a guy that you can throw out there every time that you know can get the job done is going to be massive for the Devils.
Let's chat. We can maybe come back to this because I think we're going to end up having some conversations about the East and what it looks like after this frenzy of free agency, but we'll stay local for the time being. The Islanders, I would say, had the second best free agency in our local tri-state area. Okay. Tough to top the Devils. Devils made some really good moves. Probably easy to beat the Rangers. So they slide in right in the middle. Nick, I'll defer to you. The two moves that I really like. Anthony DeClaire, been a big fan of his for a minute. And a guy that we've talked about before, Mike Riley, bringing Mike Riley back on a one-year, $1.25 million deal. It's not flashy by any means, but Mike Riley was a really solid blue liner for this Islanders team. A guy that I looked at and went, you know what? Even as the Islanders at times were falling apart defensively, I was like, he's playing good hockey. I think we talked about it at the stadium series in February. Bring him back on that cheap of a contract. I looked at that and I went, that's a really smart move by Luke.
Yeah, when you're looking at sort of the defensive fill-ins, when, you know, Pulock was out for a while, Mayfield was out for a while, Riley was the one where you said, okay, this guy might just not be a short-term replacement. This guy could fit in with this group, and he did. He fit into Waugh's mold perfectly. I think a guy like Robert Bortuzzo did not exactly fit into what Waugh was imagining, but Riley certainly did. You know, they picked him up when I'm shocked that, you know, Florida didn't want him. That was insane to me, considering the way that he plays. He likes being on Long Island. No one is a bigger Mike Riley stan, actually, than Stefan Rosner. Rosner does not shut up about loving Mike Riley. And I don't blame him. I think he plays the game right. He is solid enough defensively and has a good enough shot to cover all aspects of the game. And that's what the Islanders needed. They need someone who covered all aspects of the game. That's what Riley did. Talking about the Duke, I'm going back and forth on this. I was really hyped when it dropped. You know, shouting Lou Masterclass from the rooftops. I got a comment or two saying, you know, why has he been on what was it, nine teams in his career. Clearly, someone who's been on nine teams can't be that good. But you look at, you know, he got traded, I think, three times in the last year. He started with Florida, didn't really fit into that, you know, that physical, gritty mode that the Florida Panthers were heading in. So they ship him off to San Jose. San Jose is obviously not a contender. So what are you going to do keeping Anthony Duclair? Sorry. Yeah, sorry, Trey.
No,
They
sorry,
just
don't
weren't a
worry.
contender last year.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's no point in keeping Duke around. You send him off to Tampa Bay, and Tampa Bay gets knocked out earlier in the playoffs. So I think he got unlucky with a lot of the teams that he was on. And I think he'll find a good spot here. He's fast when he's healthy. In his games with Tampa, he was a point per game player nearly. He has four seasons with over 20 goals. There's a lot to like with Duclair so long as he stays healthy. And I'm all right with this one from Lou. I'm all right with it.
Listen, it's when you talk about Anthony Duclair, yes, the fact that he keeps changing teams maybe is a little bit of an eyebrow raise. He's probably not someone that you think could go anywhere and have success. But you know, you bring up an interesting point. Like Duclair was a pretty big part of the Florida team that won the President's Trophy. And that's his only 30
Yeah.
goal season. So that team that was very much skill and offensive firepower, he was a great fit on. And when they brought in Maurice after that, after they lost to Tampa in the second round and they got more physical, that's not really up Duclair's out, but he was a reliable guy for those Florida teams. And then I think he ends up being a cap casualty and he goes to San Jose at the beginning of this past season. And again, it's tough to evaluate anyone on San Jose right now because
Definitely.
almost like where Chicago was at this year too, where it's like it almost doesn't look like an NHL roster at times. And I think it's very telling that when he got traded to Tampa Bay, which is not only an NHL roster, when he joined Tampa Bay, they were red hot. They looked like one of the hottest teams coming into the playoffs. We all kind of looked at them and went, no one wants to play them as a wild card team. And again, almost a point per game player, 15 points, 8 goals in 17 games. Like that is, he is a guy that has speed, a real nice shot. I always kind of wondered, it never felt like a Rangers reunion has been plausible with him, but I always kind of wondered about him. Like he's probably not the playmaker that the Rangers are looking for, but I think that his speed and his shot will always play. And for a team like the Islanders that maybe wants a little bit more scoring touch, or maybe wants a little bit more like speed or boost, whatever word you want to use, I think he can be a nice fit there. It might not be the no-brainer and a guarantee that it's going to work, but I could see a world where he becomes a 25-goal scorer, 50-point guy on this Islanders team, which is, I mean, you sign up for that any day, I think.
You know, just to add on it a little bit, I mean, I know he's been on like he said, not nine different teams, but he's just a glue guy, you know, he's a journeyman. He goes around and he fits in the role what he needs to do. So even though, you know, this is his ninth team, I think for the Islanders, even though they had very limited cap space, you know, they did what they had to do. And it's a good pickup with the very limited resources they have. And he should bring a lot to the team. I think it's a good signing. It's going to bring some little extra scoring power and bring some speed to the table as well.
And he'll be on the first line, most likely on the left wing. So he'll be with Horvat and Barzal, which that's all of a
It's a
sudden one
nice
of the scarier first
combo.
lines in all of hockey. So I'm looking forward to seeing that.
And it's a line that can skate out the barn. Like you're gonna have to be on the tippy tops of your skates if you want to hang with them. Like they're gonna be flying all over the place.
Yeah, Duclair and Barzal is crazy.
Let me ask you about this, Nick. Did you see? I imagine you've seen the report. Ruslan Ishkakov heading back to the KHL. I just want to get what's the feeling there because I know he was a guy that came over to America at the tail end of the season and started to generate some hype. Feels like he's a like really offensively talented guy, and I'm just curious where you lie on that.
Yeah, I liked Isakov, really. I mean, what this dropped just a couple hours ago.
Yeah, Stefan gave you a couple hours.
Okay, yeah. What is this? CSKA Moscow or something? they own his rights. So it's, you know, it's an unfortunate situation there. But based on, you know, the cap being what it is, considering that he likely wouldn't get a lot of ice time, it makes sense for him to go back. I liked him. He's a little on the smaller side, which is a little bit of a worrying issue. I mean, I saw him, I saw him take his rookie lap, and I was like, did they just let like a 15-year-old on the ice? No, that's just how big Isakov is. But I thought he brought a lot of skill. He brings a lot of speed. And sad day, sad day.
Well, we'll keep an eye on him. That is always, it's always the risk. And it's a lot of times why you see some of the Russian guys fall in the draft. I mean, that's kind of what happened a little bit with Matvei Michkov and the Philadelphia Flyers. Like, that was a guy that could have gone second overall in the 2023 draft, and he falls to seven because there's no timetable about when he's going to be able to get out and go come to America. Now it looks like he's going to make the NHL this year, but that is always the risk with guys like Isakov. You don't know a lot of times with the Russian rights, it can get tricky. So that's a situation that would be developing for the Islanders. I don't know that they necessarily needed him this year. I think you hit the nail on the head. Like, what exactly would his playing time have looked like to begin with?
Yeah, I mean, he brings skill up the middle, which is nice. And maybe the Isles could use a little bit more of that, but they just, especially with the signing of Duke, it's, you have a lot of the skill and speed you need. You just need the physicality in your forward group. And Isakov, unfortunately, doesn't bring that. So I'm not losing any sleep over this, but I liked him, short king in the NHL, and just didn't work out that way.
All right, I guess let's talk about the Rangers.
Fine.
It's a situation where I think two things can be true at once, and I'm curious if either of you will disagree. I think the Rangers avoided giving out a lot of bad contracts. When you look at what forwards were making in the open market, I mean, Bertuzzi gets six, or Toffoli gets six, Bertuzzi gets 5.5, Stamkos gets a 4x8. Gensel, I mean, it wasn't really on the open market because Tampa trades for his rights, but he gets 9. Reinhardt takes a discount and gets 8 to stay with Florida. A lot of the forwards that were around and were available got steeper contracts than maybe people thought they were going to get. The market, I think, really dictated a little bit of inflation and value. At the same time, for a team that is kind of branded on, well, we need to win now, this 2-year span that we have Panarin under contract is like the last 2 years of this core before you probably have to reset a little bit, go in a different direction. To pull that maneuver with Gaudreau, where you place him on waivers and scummily, I would say, get rid of him under the table. And all the stuff that happened with Trulo, which we'll get into at the end of the show, like, they're clearing up all this cap space, feels like they're gearing up for a major move. And then you trade for Riley Smith and you sign Sam Carrick, and that's it. Again, I have a hard time telling you that there's a contract out there that I'd rather the Rangers sign. Maybe Marchessault for 5 and 5.5. But outside of that, I think there are a lot of contracts that I'm glad the Rangers stayed away from. At the same time, you do have to say that as the league and the Eastern Conference gets better, and you need to get better if you want to win a Stanley Cup, that right now you don't feel great about this offseason.
Maybe you don't feel great, but I agree. You avoided a lot of bad contracts. So I would say that we're going to get into free agency. I think that was maybe the theme of this free agency season, was a lot of big money contracts that, I mean, okay. It's always bad on July 1st to say whether or not a contract is good because they haven't even played a game yet, but these were some expensive deals that went down that I think, with some players that are mostly aging, that I think that the Rangers did a good job staying away from. And I know that Rangers fans are going to flame Chris Drury on Twitter because people love action. They're obsessed with it. But sometimes the best action might be inaction. And you made it to the conference final. You were just a couple games, a couple goals short of going all the way. Yeah, you got beat by Florida. but you avoided some bad contracts. And at the end of the day, I think the Rangers will be just okay.
It right, like it's a good way to wrap in some of the news around the league. Tarasenko, who was he lingered till day two, gets a 2x4.8. So like that, if that's the market value for a guy in Vlad Tarasenko that clearly is aging, clearly is probably a step beyond his prime, even though he just helped Florida win a Stanley Cup, like that's not necessarily someone that people were toppling over to get, and he's getting a 4.8. And I'm just going to remind people, next offseason, you have to address Igor as a UFA.
Yes.
You have to give a contract to Lafreniere and Miller, who are going to be RFAs. And when you look at the contract that Slavkovsky got, like Lafreniere is probably going to get $8 million annually. Igor apparently is asking for 14% of the cap, which would be, I think that's like 12.6. Even if he comes down from that, like Igor is getting well over $10 million. And then Keandre Miller, probably the wild card here. But when you look at what young, talented defensemen are making, that could be a $7 million contract. So that's, if that is $25+ million that you need to account for, you can't really afford to take on a Steven Stamkos contract or even a $5 million AAV contract, as much as maybe bringing in Marchessault would have been interesting and feels like that's a fair deal for what he was asking for. Like, I don't know. At the Rangers' top priority should be keeping Lafreniere and Igor. And I would say yes. Miller, too. I think Miller has a huge, really high ceiling and is a key core member of this team. That if your priority is keeping those three, then you're probably limited to one-year deals, which I think is the major appeal of Riley Smith, is that 25% retained, he hits the cap at 3.75, means you have space to make a trade if you want to, and you're not locked into anything past this year.
Yeah, I mean, $25 million for three players is a lot of money for some very important players too.
Even with the cap going up, if the cap goes up another five, that's not a ton of relief.
Yeah, and I think it is actually a good idea that the Rangers play a bit safe this season on the free agency side, because, like you said, they need to really be careful about what they do for their next free agency. I think right now though is that. It's important, the very few signings that they did, like they got Sam Carrick. He'll be a good fourth liner at the center. And importantly, too, he brings kind of like a tough element to the team that they really desperately need. I mean, we saw what happened with them in the Panthers. They literally were not able to keep up with their physicality. And it's just important, the more people you have on there that can be tough and physical, they will go after the superstars and keep the team safe. You know, it's important that they do this. So even though they didn't really add that many people, and I think it might be a bit fair to say they got a bit worse this offseason, they still have some important pieces that they added.
And people were calling a lot for a Tarasenko reunion or a Patrick Kane reunion. I don't think that that's the piece that the Rangers need if they want to get over the hump, if I'm honest. I don't think that either one of them would be the difference maker in a Rangers Stanley Cup. And Lou, feel free to disagree, but
no, I don't, because listen, it's one thing if it's Gensel. Gensel's not the most physical player in the world, but he's such a talented goal scorer and he's in the prime of his career that if you're in on a guy like Gensel, like you could theoretically see that sparking your first line and finally getting Mika out of whatever rut that he's in right now.
Yeah.
They tried it with Vlad Tarasenko, and I'm like, whatever, he had an off year. He looked better this year when he came over to Florida. He still didn't blow me out of the water. Like, there's nothing that I saw from Tarasenko that makes me think, all right, if he comes over here a second time, now it's going to fix Mika Zibanejad. I don't think so. Patrick Kane, I think there's more credibility to the fact that he's playing with a busted hip and he was almost a point-per-game player this year. Like, there's a little bit more into that. He's still getting old, and that – you never had a chance to sign. He signed before the free agency opened, so it's not even that wasn't even an option. So there's no regrets in my mind there. Riley Smith is not a player I'm going to get super excited about. I even wonder if the move is. I think the most effective move, if you're looking to spark Mika, is put Lafreniere in the first line, because Panarin and Trocheck will do their thing with just about anyone, and I think we've gotten to a point with Lafreniere where I'm. If you watch the playoffs, like, I don't think he's a Panarin Trocheck merchant. Like, he was doing a lot of stuff at 5-on-5 just by himself because he's now become an aggressive, talented offensive player. that maybe that's the if Lafreniere can't spark Mika and Kreider, then no one can spark Mika and Kreider, is the way I'm thinking about it. And maybe Panarin and Trocheck unlock something in Riley Smith that the way he was in Vegas. But I don't think that's gonna happen. I think Riley Smith's gonna play with Mika. But it's not an exciting move. He's a guy that probably is past his prime a little bit, but I mean, the story out of Pittsburgh is that the system wasn't a great fit for him, so maybe it's a little better here. It's a good segue into. I didn't actually prep you for this segment, but I guess we could do something like this. Hit me with a winner and a loser of free agency, and we'll use that to talk about the overarching field, because there's a lot of stuff that went down. The dynamic of the league, I think, or the standings can change a little bit. So, Trey, let's start
I
with you.
like that.
Give me a winner, give me a loser, give me some reasons why.
I mean, I think like we were talking about earlier in the show, the Chicago Blackhawks. They're a winner. I like how they're not complacent and how they're not just gonna let them sit. They're not gonna let themselves sit back when they have such a talent like Bedard. It's nice that they got a lot better this offseason and they're just not being, like I said, complacent and sitting back. They want to try to be as competitive as possible. And it's they're not gonna be a bottom team anymore. They're gonna be, I don't know if they're exactly gonna be fighting for a playoff spot or not, but they will be close, and they're not gonna be a bottom five team anymore. And they just made so many big signings. They're gonna, I mean, Bedard's gonna have a lot of wingers next to him now, and that's just very important. I feel with losers. I mean, I was seeing a lot of things about the Dallas Stars, like they like really they their whole defense that they signed was like it was just not really that great. Like they they're in a team that's in a big like win now situation, and they're like not exactly addressing they're not doing the smartest things to address their needs. And I think that if they don't, like you can't just waste an offseason like this. And they kind of just totally wasted an offseason. They didn't really have any good signings or anything. So I definitely think the winners are the Blackhawks because, they got out of this horrible situation that they're in now and they refuse to be bad. But Dallas Stars, I definitely think that we could see them drop off a little bit next season.
You know, like the Leafs stole two. Just to talk about this a little bit more, and the Dallas situation, the Leafs stole two of their defensemen in Tanev and Hakanpaa. And the Tanev contract, I mean, is a tough one to match. See, like he's 34, and they signed him to a 6-year deal. Like that is not a contract that is going to age well. I don't love Dumba going to Dallas. I like that they brought back Duchesne, but is there
Yeah,
like
that was the one good thing he did.
All right, that's one of those situations where they went all out for a championship this season, and they came damn close to a couple games away. And you just don't have the cap to bring everyone back, but like that is they did a nice job of bolstering their blue line at the deadline. It's just tough to bring all those pieces back, especially with where Tanev's market was.
Yeah, definitely.
I like those answers, man. I thought those were really solid. As far as a winner for me, it's got to be the Florida Panthers, just because they were so smart and judicial about where they were going to spend their money, and I think they did it in a perfect way. They signed Sam Reinhart, 8.6 million cap hit. It seems like it'll age well. It's long term. I'm completely okay with that. You've retained Kulikov at 1.2 million. I thought that for 4 seasons, I thought that was very smart. But they didn't go after players that, even though they helped them win a cup this year, they didn't necessarily spend on them when they didn't need to. I think of Oliver Ekman-Larsson there. He signed with Toronto, $14 million for 4 years. They didn't take a risk on Montour. I thought that was a good call. Is he really worth $7 million? I don't think so. You can get a replacement for Montour. You can probably sign up Lindell when you need to. I thought they managed their money very well, and I'm very impressed that the Stanley Cup did not go to their heads and needing to re-sign all these guys. That said, I give an honorable mention to the Washington Capitals. They certainly had a good free agency as well. And the fact that they got Matt Roy and that the Kings let him walk is still bothers me. Multiple times a day, I just shudder and shiver thinking about it. That rubbed me the wrong way. Chychrun, I thought, for Nick Jensen was an excellent, excellent move for them. Andrew Mangiapane from the Flames. He had an excellent year in Calgary a couple years ago, and while the numbers were down a little bit, I think giving him a shot's a good call. The only reason they get my honorable mention is because they took on Pierre-Luc Dubois' contract.
Yeah.
And that's the only reason. That's the only reason, man. As far as a loser, and I hate to do this, but it's so true. The Los Angeles Kings, man, what are we doing? Oh, what are we doing?
It was rough.
Warren Fogle might be the best part of this situation. And that's just to fill in the hole that Arvidsson is leaving. But Arvidsson, you know, he only played somewhere around like 20-something games for the Kings last season. It was not good with injury. But when Arvidsson is on, he's one of the best players on the ice. Fogle, I'm not sure, is going to be better than Arvidsson was. Joel Edmondson made me want to throw up. What are we doing here, guys? He's 31, but he's not good offensively. I wasn't happy with his tenure in Washington. I'm so not on board with Joel Edmondson. It is ridiculous. Honestly, I'm looking for a guy like Jordan Spence to take over from him, honestly. Jordan Spence, I thought, has been great developing with the Kings. I'm so down in the dumps with this team. They're not fixing what they need to fix, and it's trouble, man. It's trouble.
I don't understand. So you're not willing to give 5.7 to Matt Roy, who's coming off a fantastic defensive season, but you're going to cough up almost 3.9 to Joel Edmondson? Like, I don't get the vision. And then we talked about on last week's show, like, hey, they need a little bit of offense here, because of the teams that made the playoffs, they were bottom of the barrel with the Islanders and Capitals in terms of goal scoring. And like, a good system defensively can only get you so far, especially if you're losing Matt Roy. That's going to take a step back. That Warren Fogle is not Victor Arvidsson. Like, that's a huge blow to a Kings offense that already wasn't great to begin with. To the Florida point, yeah, like, it's kind of wild how many players are making deals to go there for cheaper. Like, Nate Schmidt agreed to go there for at a bargain bin of a price, keeping Reinhart for $8 million, bringing back Kulikov, and knowing who to cut bait with. Like, I don't think they needed Tarasenko. I don't think they need OEL, and I don't think they needed Montour at that contract. That, like, Florida and Bill Zito are just a really smart franchise right now. Winners and losers for me, I think these teams did very similar things, and the difference is where they're at right now in terms of ability to win. My winner is the Nashville Predators. My loser is the Seattle Kraken. I think both gave out contracts that are big and won't age well. Like, when you look at Stamkos for 4x8, the last couple years of that contract might not look good. There are already questions about whether or not he's able to generate 5-on-5. The metrics didn't look good next to Point and Kucherov this season. The Brady Shea contract for 7x7. I love Brady Shea. That feels like an overpay. I mean, Marchessault is a good ad, but he's another guy that's getting up there in age. I love bringing back Carrier. But Nashville made a ton of moves. Scott Wedgwood is their backup goaltender. They should be a Stanley Cup contender this year, if not, or they'll at least be a strong playoff contender. Maybe I'll hold off on praising them as a Cup contender until we see how the season goes and whatnot. But they were already a playoff team. I thought they battled well in the playoffs. And then we'll see what happens. They bolstered up an offense that was already pretty solid, and now they've got 2 40-plus goal scorers on the team. Seattle, the Montour contract, I think, is a bit of an overpay, 7x7. The Chandler Stephenson contract, I think, is ridiculous.
It's crazy.
By over $6 million, like, that is a really steep contract. to
That might
give.
be the worst co that might be the worst contracts
I
that was
think it
given
might be the
out.
worst contract that was given out in the offseason. And my point is, listen, like obviously at some point you need to make moves if you want to get back to being a postseason contender. But if you're going to give out contracts like that that are risky, where the best value is going to be in the early portion of those deals, like Montour is going to be most valuable in this, probably the first 3 year window of this 7 year deal. Probably the same thing for Stevenson. Are they even going to be a postseason team for the next 2 years? Like they still got a long ways to go here, I think. I mean, maybe they could sneak back in. The West isn't getting any easier. Nashville, at least, they'll be able to be in a win now situation right now. They'll take advantage of the prime of those contracts when it's worth giving them the money. And then if you have to deal with some ugly contracts a couple years from now, so be it. You had a couple years to win. These contracts could get ugly when Seattle's trying to win and is in the best spot to win.
I guess
Agreed.
the only reason that I don't hate it entirely, and you gave up so many good points, is that after moving Wenny at the deadline, they needed help down the middle. And I think Stevenson could be that help that they need, especially if he last year wasn't great for him, but the year before he was excellent.
He's
Because then
played.
you'd have Matty Beniers, Stevenson, and Yanni Gourde. I mean, that's pretty solid right there.
Don't get it twisted. Like I like Montour and I like Stevenson. It's less about the players and more about the price and the fact that when it comes time for them to win, I just don't know that this was the time to spend like this. You know what I'm
Right.
saying? Like I'm just not sure the window's there yet. If they made these deals 2 years from now or similar deals in 2 years from now, I think I'd be talking about them the same way I'm talking about Nashville, which is, hey, these contracts might age poorly. But you have to do whatever it takes to win in this really tough NHL right now, where it feels like every team's getting better. And that is, I mean, the main takeaway I take from this segment is that holy cow, did a lot of teams get better. If you want to talk about the East, teams that we didn't mention, Detroit, I think bring in a lot of guys that's probably going to end up snapping their 8 year postseason drought, bringing back Kane, bringing in Tarasenko, Tyler Motte's a really smart deal, Gustafsson fits in well with that system as well. A lot of former Rangers on that team, but Detroit's made some moves to close the gap and maybe be more competitive in the East. Boston bring in Lindholm and Zadorov. Zadorov, I think, is perfect for them. Lindholm, if he can unlock what he was in Calgary, I mean, they needed help down the middle. Carolina gets two awesome defensemen at a bargain of a. When you look at what Sean Walker and Gostisbehere went to them for, like well below market value. I'm worried about them offensively. I kind of want to hear your thoughts on this. Worried about them offensively. I'm kind of in the middle on what Carolina did this offseason, where their blue line's going to be fine. They'll recover from losing Pesce and Shea by bringing in Walker and Gostisbehere. They'll still be great. But you lose Gensel, Teravainen, you lose Nason. Yes, you bring back Martinuk. But especially with the rumors that Natchez might leave as well because he wants a change of scenery, unless you get a top line right winger in return, Carolina's top six is going to be a little weaker this year. And the whole point is that the reason they got Gensel is that their goal scoring's not in a spot where it needed to be. And even with Gensel, wasn't enough to get them over the hump of the second round of the playoffs. I'm a little concerned about Carolina offensively.
I don't disagree with that. I think their defense is very solid now, and
Their
but
defense is always
that's
pretty good.
yeah. But now that you have Ghost, probably what on your like your third pair or something, that's insane. And the question is, are they in for an identity shift? And I don't know if the Hurricanes are trying to do that. So yeah, you're right. They lost a lot of good players. Now they have what Bradley Nadeau on the left wing, William Carrier, right? Yeah, it's a loss. I would say it's a loss. And if you want to count them as a loser here in free agency, I would
I
be happy
did.
to do that.
I wrote an article and I did, and I don't know if that's a hot take because again, I like the moves that they made with Walker and Ghost. I think are two of the best signings of free agency to get them at that value, and those are two guys that should fit in perfectly. But again, their issue is not defense. Their issue is goal scoring, and they didn't do really anything to address that. And again, if you're trading Natchez, which it seems like that's the result that's going to end up happening here. And he's going to command a big package in return, so maybe they get one or two top six guys, and that changes the way they feel about this offseason. But as it stands right now, if you run the risk of losing Natchez, who's in my mind one of their top three goal scorers and one of their top three
Sure.
offensive forwards, that's another blow to a team that already, like, Gensel was huge
Lost
for
so
them,
much.
and Paravainen has been a staple for them.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, yeah, sure. Even though their two defenseman additions have been really nice with Walker and Gostisbehere, I do think that they've honestly, like, they've lost way too much for being trying to be cup contenders. Like, it's, and sure, like, their defense is great now, but they don't really have that much scoring power anymore. Even though those two defenders, they are very good puck moving defensemen, and they should add on to offense from going from defense to offense. I do think that they kind of lost a bit too much, really. And they're probably one of the teams that really, like, they got really a lot worse this season, I think. And it'll be in a metropolitan conference division. It's going to make that race for that playoff spot even a bit closer now, because I don't exactly think they're like a shoe-in for the playoffs anymore.
I mean, I still think they make it, but I mean, it's the same thing with the Rangers, is that the Metro got largely better. Like, Washington closed the gap. It's weird to say them closing the gap because they made the playoffs, but
Weird.
we all have the same opinion of Washington, which is that they kind of lucked into that playoff spot. You don't ever want to
Yeah.
call a playoff team lucky, but you look at the metrics, you look at the stats, they were not a great team. But now it feels like they're active. Nick went through all the moves. Washington did a lot of really smart things to get way better and get way more competitive. I thought they were just trading for PLD to keep an offensive piece there because they moved on from Kuznetsov and to get Ovechkin that goal record. And it seems like they're not only set on getting Ovi that goal record, they want to make the playoffs with Ovi again. And they'll have a chance. I think they'll have a chance to. Columbus
Yeah.
getting Monahan, like that makes Columbus a little bit more competitive. They're not a playoff team, but that's maybe they're not the easy they're maybe they're not the easy out that they've been the last couple years. Like, Philly will still be competitive, even though they didn't have cap space to really add. They'll still be sneaky. The Devils took a leap. I think the Islanders made smart moves. Like, everyone in the Metro did a pretty nice job this year with, we're talking about the Rangers and the Hurricanes, the two teams that maybe didn't do enough to take the leap. And we just kind of ran through some of the teams in the Atlantic where it's like Boston just beefed up after getting to the second round. Detroit, I think, is probably on a path to make the playoffs. Buffalo will be interesting. It's Tampa gets Gensel. Like, that is, I know they lose Stamkos, and it's, I don't know how much of a net gain everything is when the dust settles, but McDonough's back there. Like, Tampa's not going to go away. So the Eastern Conference, to me, is going to be in a really exciting spot. But you're going to be pulling your hair out if you're one of these teams. And then we haven't even talked about Edmonton yet. Nick, we talked last week about Edmonton came in with 10 unrestricted free agents and just
Yep.
over $10 million in cap space. What they were able to do and what they were able to bring in, to me, is exceptional. Like, I love the add of Arvidsson. I love the add of Skinner. And you keep, I would say, core members of your bottom six that helped extend the depth. So bringing back Connor Brown, bringing back Henrique, bringing back Corey Perry, bringing back Janmark, what they were able to bring in, they brought in way more talent than I thought they were going to be able to afford.
And I thought what was so smart about it is they didn't hand out a contract over 3 years long. It to like 11 players. They didn't hand out a contract over 3 years long. And I thought that was very smart. They know that, you've got that Draisaitl contract coming up. You've got a lot of these deals coming up where you need to keep your big guys around, and keeping Henrique, keeping Matthias Janmark, keeping even Corey Perry, you want him to stick around for another year. I thought that wasn't necessarily a bad go. I was totally okay with that. Connor Brown, I thought actually in the playoffs did very well. They kept all the pieces that worked for them in the playoffs. They've still got Carrick went to the Rangers, Fogle went to the Kings, but those were guys that weren't doing anything in particularly impressive for the Oilers. So I thought that they did a good job. If I had to give them a grade, I give them a solid B+, A-. I thought they got the guys they need to get.
Like, I think I go
Yeah,
with
they're
A range. I think they got better because Skinner
totally.
and Arvidsson are upgrades for this team, and like that is like we talked about how the bottom six gave Edmonton life beyond their top grouping of the McDavid, Draisaitl, Hyman, Nugent Hopkins, Bouchard. Now you have scoring touch beyond that. Like maybe Evander Kane is supposed to be that, but now you have Jeff Skinner and Victor Arvidsson, who, if they're both healthy, those are two potential 30-goal scorers right there. And so that's just another layer of offense for an Oilers team, and you bring back the guys that made you sturdy defensively in your bottom six.
And I would like to see them sign – oh, sorry. Sorry, go ahead.
Sorry, don't worry about it. I think that Victor Arvidsson signing was so little cap they really had after they spent it all on re-signing all these bottom six guys and stuff. I think that Victor Arvidsson signing was pretty crucial. It's almost like a perfect complement to McDavid and Draisaitl. It's in such a small deal too, only 2 years and $4 million for him. I mean, I think that's a very nice deal to have, and they were able to get better this offseason. Honestly, before, when you were talking about winners and losers, they were one of the teams I was actually thinking about mentioning in my winners because, yeah, sure, it like didn't really actually make any many groundbreaking moves, but they were able to get better with the little that they had. So I think this is a pretty good offseason for them. I'd give them an A.
I would like to see them hand out a good contract to Dylan Holloway, who I think is a good presence for them offensively. He brings a good amount of speed, and he's, even though he's not one of those top guys on the roster, I think that he's a valuable part of the Oilers thing. He's an RFA right now, so I'd like to see that happen.
Are there any teams that we haven't given due love or hate to? I know we feel like we've covered a lot.
Nothing that totally stood out to me. We sort of talked about the Detroit Red Wings with Tarasenko, Cam Talbot, but that Gus wasn't particularly, you know, speaking to me.
I think they added some championship pedigree there with Tarasenko a little bit, and I like they'll be in a better spot with a full year of Kane. I think they can make the playoffs. I'm really curious to see what they do with their goaltending, because they brought in Talbot and they brought in Jack Campbell, and you still have the two guys he had in net last year. So someone's going to have to go. Probably two people might have to go as well. I don't know, be it Stash Campbell in the AHL. I'm not blown away by where Detroit sits right now, but I think they got better. Colorado brought back – they brought back Jonathan Drouin. I like that. Like, they'll still be fine in the Central.
What do we make of DeBrusk with the Canucks?
I think it's an overpay.
I thought it was an overpay as well.
Seven and five and a half. It's Vancouver's really interesting. That's maybe the team we should go into a little bit more in depth, because I'm a Danton Heinen fan. Desharnais did a nice job with Edmonton this year. That like bringing him in is not bad, but like Zadorov was a big piece for them. Lindholm was a huge piece in the postseason for them. Like, they still have their main core of guys, but you lost a few impact players here. I'm curious to see where Vancouver goes. I mean, they've got a great coach in Rick Tocchet, but it's not easy to get past losing, especially, I think Zadorov especially, it's not easy to get past that.
And now those guys are both Bruins, so, you know, good for the Bruins. I thought they had a lot of contracts to deal with, and I thought that they picked up two very good pieces.
Let's do some draft stuff quickly here. Just locally, Islanders draft Cole Eiserman 20th overall. Rangers draft EJ Emery 30th overall. You seem to be pretty excited in their group chat when they drafted Eiserman. Like, what are you looking for here? I know that's a guy the Rangers were reportedly in on as well.
I was not actually very over the moon about the Eiserman pick. Right. And there's a good reason. He was the best, to give credit to Lou Lamoriello, he was the best choice considering the fact that he had not been taken off the board yet. 20. I thought that the fact he was still on is ridiculous considering the fact that it didn't he led the league in goal scoring. I thought he was, didn't he? Yeah, I think so. He's a natural goal scorer. He will put the puck in the back of the net. There's no doubt about that. But do you know they also said that about Oliver Wahlstrom? And I'm so worried that he will become a second Oliver Wahlstrom. They describe his play often, Iserman, they describe his play as one-dimensional. And from the video that I've seen from Iserman, yeah, the defense isn't there. He doesn't move his feet very well. I'm hoping that anyone expecting him to crack the roster in 2 years is over their head. It's going to take longer than that. I would like to see him develop his skills more, and maybe if he does, then we might be seeing one of the more prolific goal scorers in the league for years to come. Still, the holes are glaring for me, and I'm not totally bought into Cole Iserman, I won't lie.
EJ Emery, it's the flip side. He's a defensive defenseman that the reason he goes 30th overall is the offensive profile is not there. He's not putting up points even at the lower levels. But he's supposed to be a freak athlete. His dad was a CFL player. He set the record for vertical leap in the combine. So physical traits, he's supposed to be a great skater, supposed to have a good stick. And I don't hate the Rangers going for a defensive defenseman like this at this point in the draft because, again, I probably wouldn't say that it's a steal. I just think it's a good value pick. And it's for a Rangers team that theoretically you have your top offensive defenseman, Adam Fox. And if you can keep him around, you have Keandre Miller, who's got a good offensive profile as well. Not for nothing, Braden Schneider's not bad. I like Braden Schneider's got some solid skills there, even though I don't know if he'll ever be a power play quarterback or anything like that. What the
Right.
Rangers probably need, and especially you watch a couple of the last playoffs, is another sturdy blue liner that can skate well, is not going to get walked as teams are driving to the net. I mean, that's Florida walked the Rangers blue line a lot in the ECF. So you need a guy that
Totally.
can play, sturdy defense, play with a good stick, and bring a high level of skating to the game that maybe makes them a little bit. Just a little bit stingier defensively, and that's he's going to go to North Dakota for a couple of years, it looks like. But when he comes into the NHL, that seems like that's a skill set that should translate to at least a like floor consistent a floor of a consistent NHL player, even if he's nothing special. No complaints.
Okay.
Let's end. A lot of Rangers today. Let's end with the Jacob Trouba situation. It's been an ugly offseason for the Rangers beyond how you're grading them from an asset standpoint. The Barkley Goodrow situation, reports are that bad, upset the locker room a little bit with the lack of transparency. And now we're in this weird spot with Jacob Trouba. You don't blame the Rangers for wanting to move on from Jacob Trouba. It felt like it's a crossroads. At some point, they're going to need to move on from that contract, especially because it's 2 more years and they need that money to use on Lafreniere, Igor, and Miller. And the play has slipped. So Drury's doing the due diligence if you want to try and move him. Obviously, the player doesn't want to be moved. And it gets further complicated by the fact that he's a loyal husband. His wife has a residency in New York that lasts through the summer of next year. And the dialogue's just gotten ugly. Like, Ranger fans, I'm not surprised because I don't think that Ranger fans are great people, generally. I say that as a Ranger fan. And just the way that Jacob Trouba's wife has been talked about in certain circles, I'm at least happy. There are a lot of Ranger fans that are like, out there, they're like, if you're being a dick to Jacob Trouba's wife, you're just a bad guy. And even so, even some of those people are being, I think, unnecessarily harsh to Jacob Trouba. He has every right to use the 15-team no trade clause that the Rangers gave him. Like, just as Chris Drury has every right technically to waive him, he has every right to say no to a trade that's on his 15-team no trade list. It gets more complicated with the rumor that apparently, if they tried to send him to a team that wasn't on his no trade list, he would still try and push back against it. That gets into a whole weird realm of I don't know how contracts work. And like, technically that clause doesn't go into effect until he doesn't show up for camp for that team, but it would still dissuade teams from trading for him. That's more complicated. I don't know how to get into that, but this whole situation is just a mess. And I'm disappointed at Ranger fans, and I'm disappointed that this is the way it's all unfolding.
I feel bad. I feel bad. Jacob Trouba is clearly a great guy. I mean, everything off the ice. Yes, off the ice, he seems like a great guy. He's a family man, Lou. He's a family man.
Family guy.
And you can't blame someone for that. And it's been I can't even imagine what he must be feeling like after hearing all the swirlings about the Rangers wanting to get rid of him, getting asked for his 15 team. That's tough, man, especially when, you know, you're the captain of your team. That hurts. And just to echo what you said, Rangers fans are all terrible people.
I mean, you know, like, yeah, no, sure, he's a great guy, you know, but like, it's part of the business, you know. I mean, the Rangers, they gotta get rid of his contract somehow, because it's not worth it anymore. And I know, sure, he's the captain and everything, but like, this happens in other sports too, where people that want to be staying with their team, they get shipped off like that because they know the team that ships them off. They know that they can do without them. And just like I was talking about before, the Rangers, their free agency next season, they need that money.
Yeah.
They need that money desperately.
Well, where I'm at now though is I know that they might still try and move Trouba before free agency. That's the right move. Whether or not you use that money on Stamkos or Gensel, like whatever big name free agent you might have been gunning for. But now I just don't, like, if you trade Trouba, unless you get a defenseman back in return, who is playing bottom pair right side? Because you don't have a ton of good right shot defensemen in your system. You're already promoting Zach Jones. Zach Jones is looking like he's going to be your everyday bottom line left shot guy. All the, like, free agent guys or the targets that might have been linked to the Rangers, whether it was Chychrun or Chychrun, or whether it was if you wanted to go down any of the Carolina guys route, Gostisbehere or whatever, like,
yeah,
whoever you wanted to talk about, they're all off the market. So I don't know. I do generally agree that Trouba's play is slipping. But there is a world where, like, your replacement for Trouba at this point is not better than Jacob Trouba. I mean, there's just not that many available defensemen anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, again, you have to get rid of that contract by next summer. That's 100%. My other take here, and I don't know if this is going to be unpopular. I don't think Trouba being on the team at the start of free agency stopped the Rangers from signing anyone. Like, I don't think there's any contract out there that the Rangers were doing if they had traded Trouba. And again, I think if
that's fair,
I think if they wanted someone, even if Trouba was on the roster, they sign them and then they trade Trouba. Because there are a few teams that are over the cap right now that, whatever, you make the move and then you figure out a way to clear up that cap space. Like, I genuinely think if they wanted to give Stamkos 4x8, they would have done it. And then they would have they would have traded Trouba, or they would have waived him, or they would have found some way to do it. So I don't think they wanted to give Stamkos a 4x8. So I don't think that Trouba interfered with any free agency moves this year.
I mean,
yeah,
you know, I guess,
yeah.
I guess, you know, I mean, keep, just, I mean, just be sure on this too. You know, I mean, you can keep Trouba for this season, I guess. I mean, especially if you're not actually planning to do anything with signing. But, I mean, next season, I think, at least next season, he's got to go.
I don't disagree. I still, like, there's a world where they get rid of Trouba and whoever they bring in is better than Jacob Trouba, because let's not beat around the bush. Jacob Trouba's been bad. It's been a tough watch the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Off to a good start this season, and then it completely fell off the rails. He's one of the main reasons that the postseason went the way it did. It's there, and there are a lot of people that deserve blame for the Rangers' 6-game loss in the ECF. Mika Zibanejad's up there. Panarin's probably up there. But Trouba's right there. Like, Trouba is the reason that the Panthers went up 1-0 in that game, in game 6.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same way with Barkley Goodrow. As much as Goodrow might have been doing good things for the Rangers, and there are good things that Trouba's doing for the Rangers. At the contract and at the AAV that he's making, it's a deal that they needed to move on from at some point. And this is just a fun little trend. They continue to try and trade like all of their captains. They traded Callahan, they traded McDonough, both Tampa
Right.
Bay. And now Trouba is in this mix as well. So it just a mess of a situation.
Moral of the story is don't assume the captaincy.
Yeah, I was campaigning for Trocheck to be captain. I think I'll retract that retract that proposal.
Yeah.
But that is a little bit of a melancholy end to our show. I don't know if there's anything else that we really need to get into. We covered a lot. It's a big week
Yeah.
in the NHL. Free agency frenzy, most of the top targets are gone. And now we get into this weird spot where, there's probably going to be still be trades happening, but the news flow slows down a bit here.
Make Jimmy Vesey the captain.
Hey, that's mean. Don't do that. I want him forever.
Make Kreider.
Oh,
Kreider's the captain.
he would deserve it.
Mr. Ranger.
Yeah, so I think that wraps up the show. I think we'll at least have one more 5-on-3. We got to figure out the future of the show, but we'll have at least one more show before we take a hiatus. Trey, man, first podcast ever. Good stuff, buddy.
Thank you.
And as always, for Nick Palmer, I'm Lou Orlando, 5-on-3, Production WFG Sports. Take care, everyone. Happy 4th of July.